Welcome to Criminalia, a production of Shondaland Audio in partnership with iHeartRadio.
Welcome to Criminalia. This season, we're talking about witchcraft and alchemy throughout the ages, and what may or may not have become of those who practiced those arts. I'm Maria Tremarchi.
And I'm Holly Fry. Today, we are going to talk about the first alchemist of the season, Heinrich Cornelius Agrippa. Heinrich was born on September 14, 1486. It's believed he was born into a noble or once noble family. We do know that his father was a citizen of Cologne in western Germany, but no information remains about his mother or any other members of his family. A bit about his personal life, and then we'll get into his work. We do know that he married three times. He was married to his first wife in 1514. She died shortly thereafter. Their son, born in 1515, died in early childhood. So we can't confirm if mother and baby died in childbirth, but because of the dates of their death, that is something that we did immediately consider. Younger, older, rich, or poor mothers all had a very high risk of dying while giving birth at this time, as well as any complications afterwards. And in 1521, Heinrich married a second time, and that couple had six children. 7 years into their marriage, his wife died. He did get married again less than a year later, but the only thing we know about that union is that it was, apparently, an unhappy one.
Heinrich was a German polymath. He was a lawyer, a physician, a theologian, a soldier, or perhaps a mercenary of some sort. And he was also an alchemist. He was an influential and prolific occult writer and gained the reputation as, quote, an occult philosopher. He's been described as an honest, fearless, and generous man, but somewhat vainglorious, whereby he himself several times spoiled his chances at success. Some considered him to be a scientific swindler.
Heinrich attended the University of Cologne between 1499 and 1502. There he studied subjects including law, medicine, magic sciences, and theology. He also began establishing personal relationships with other German humanists who shared his interest in ancient wisdom. Some sources suggest that he was inspired to found a secret society devoted to astrology and magic. Quote, "So requisite is the use of astrology to the arts of divination, as it were the key that opens the door of all their mysteries," is something that he once wrote.
He was a student and also a soldier, as we mentioned, and he served Maximilian I, Holy Roman Emperor, for several years. He would go back and forth between academia and military service and led a fairly restless life across Europe, one you might call an intellectual journey.
Much later, after his death, some began to doubt his degree in medicine as well as his advanced degrees in canon and civil law, but experts have suggested that it's likely he received these degrees during two periods of his life that we actually don't know much about. Between the years 1502 and 1507, and again between 1511 and 1518. Although in that latter period, there's some speculation that he was serving military duty for Maximilian. It's unclear, but in this capacity, Heinrich may have been working as a mercenary for the emperor or as a member of a paramilitary organization for the crown.
In 1510, in Würzburg, Heinrich met Johannes Trithemius, the abbot of St. Jacob's Monastery. It's written that this could have been the most important meeting of his life. That's because Johannes was the man who encouraged him to complete what is considered to be his greatest work, the three books of occult philosophy. Johannes advised Heinrich, quote, not to imitate bullocks, but to emulate birds. The first draft was dedicated to him.
This work, The Three Books of Occult Philosophy, was originally written in 1510, but then substantially reworked by Heinrich and then finally published again in 1533. It's considered one of the most famous writings about the idea of magic, and it relies heavily upon the tenets of Kabbalah, Hermeticism, and Neoplatonism. He often wrote critically about the politics, culture, and religion of his time, and wrote that the ancient magic included in his writings could benefit humanity. His satirical writings addressed his views of the state of science in the 15th and 16th centuries, and he became a major influence on philosophers Montaigne, Descartes, and Goethe.
More than 500 years later, Heinrich is considered one of the most influential occultists, or occult philosophers, we should say, of the early modern period. But not everyone in his lifetime was pleased with his theories and experimentation. The Three Books of Occult Philosophy was condemned as heretical and blasphemous by the Inquisitor of Cologne, and possibly the Dominican Inquisitor as well. The condemnation led to a suspension of his printing.
Heresy does not have a complicated definition. If you are accused of it, it means very basically that you hold a belief with which the church disagrees. And in the eyes of the church, being condemned a heretic was analogous to being someone with a deadly contagious disease. To be branded one was to be banished, ostracized, and perhaps executed. Despite that opposition, or perhaps because of it, Heinrich's manuscript would go on to circulate for more than a century.
We're going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsor, and when we return, we'll talk about Heinrich's celebrated work, The Three Books of Occult Philosophy.
Welcome back to Criminalia. Let's talk more specifically about how Heinrich's works were denounced for heresy.
Many alchemists, as well as naturalists and physicians, struggled with the ideas and the responsibilities that came with their attempts to understand the world around them. Heinrich thought and wrote about occult philosophy, which means he studied the hidden causes of things and their manipulation by magic. Magic, he considered, was the highest form and the end of philosophy.
Heinrich's goal actually sounds pretty noble in its ambition. He wanted to separate magic from baseless and irrational perception. In doing so, he believed it would make way for a restoration to the time before the fall of humans, and along with that, a reformation of Christianity. To that end, he wrote philosophical critiques of every science. He also penned a manuscript condemning the subordination of women, which was prevalent in theology, and in that manuscript he wrote, quote, "But to proceed, as in order and place, so also in matter of her creation, woman far excels man. Things receive their value from the matter they are made of and the excellent skill of their maker. Pots of common clay must not contend with china dishes, nor pewter utensils vie dignity with those of silver. Woman was not composed of any inanimate or vile dirt, but of a more refined and purified substance, enlivened and actuated by a rational soul, whose operations speak it a beam or bright ray of divinity."
His manuscript, The Three Books of Occult Philosophy, is divided into, just as the title suggests, three parts: the natural world, the celestial world, and the divine world. And it methodically details and tries to explain the philosophy, logic, and methods of magic and astrology, and how these concepts might work. So the basic idea in the three books was that God created several worlds, three of which were the domain of the elements, the heavenly world of the stars, and the realm of the angels. And at the center of these three worlds were humans who, because of their place in the universe, had the ability to gain knowledge of pretty much everything but true knowledge, which could be found only in God's love.
In 1518, or possibly 1520, Heinrich put his law degree to use as the defense attorney in a sorcery trial. This lines up with the very beginning of Europe's witch craze. After successfully defending the woman accused of being a witch, thus saving her from execution, the locals denounced him for defending a witch. Heinrich, as he did, moved on.
And 3 years later, he went on to put his medical degree to use and became a practicing physician in Switzerland between 1523 and 1524. After 1524, he left Switzerland for Francis I's court in France, where he became the personal physician to the Queen Mother, as well as court astrologer. When the royals became hostile toward him for his charged speeches, they stripped him of his pension and refused to allow him to leave the country. 4 years later, in 1528, when he was allowed to leave, the regent of the Netherlands, Margaret of Austria, requested that Heinrich become archivist and imperial historiographer to the Emperor Charles V in Antwerp. Margaret also happened to be the daughter of Maximilian I, and this is the same Maximilian we mentioned earlier in the episode when we talked about Heinrich's military career. Heinrich accepted Margaret's offer, and as you can see, we really weren't lying when we said he was restless.
This new position afforded Heinrich the opportunity to return to writing and publishing. This is when he drafted, but did not finish, his now celebrated work, The Declamation on the Nobility and Preeminence of the Female Sex, that was published in 1529. Following that, his work On the Uncertainty and Vanity of the Arts and Sciences, An Invective Declamation, was printed in 1530 and was considered to be, quote, a rigorous refutation of all products of human reason. It's considered one of the first testimonials to knowledge of the limits of human understanding and the uncertainty of human existence. He began to develop a reputation as a man who, quote, professed to overturn all the science.
After Margaret's death, Heinrich returned to France, but found there that he was now persecuted because of his writings and ideas. The provincial superior for Burgundy denounced Heinrich as, quote, a Judaizing heretic.
So we're going to take a break for a word from our sponsor, and when we're back, we'll talk about whether or not alchemy was a pseudoscience.
Welcome back to Criminalia. Let's wrap up with why alchemy is considered the father of what we know as chemistry and how Heinrich's legacy has lived on.
Today, many of us can be pretty quick to judge alchemy as pseudoscience, but in the last few decades, scientists have learned that that's not completely true. European porcelain? Thank alchemy. The basis for toxicology? Again, the work of alchemists. In general, alchemists were looking for the connection among all things, the planets, minerals, animals, the human body, signs of the zodiac, and the nine orders of angels. They believed that being able to manipulate these forces was white magic or natural magic. Black magic, in comparison, was believed to rely on the power of demons and the devil.
There are names you'll recognize, but not associate with the practice of alchemy, or at least probably not. Thomas Aquinas, for instance, was an eminent theologian who was permitted to study alchemy before it was condemned by the church. Roger Bacon was a medieval English philosopher and Franciscan friar who was the first European to describe the process for making gunpowder, a discovery made through his practice of alchemy. He also proposed some pretty far-out contraptions in his time, including flying machines and motorized ships and carriages. In the 16th century, Paracelsus's ideas about poisons led to the inclusion of chemistry into the practice of medicine.
This may be a surprise to some. English physicist and mathematician Isaac Newton was also a practicer of the art of alchemy. Newton was working during the time when the ideas of science, superstition, and pseudoscience were being formulated, and historian and economist John Maynard Keynes noted that Newton was, quote, the last of the magicians.
When it comes to chemistry, some alchemists were motivated by the search for the tincture they called the philosopher's stone, which could turn base metals into man-made gold, as well as grant immortality. But there was a lot more to it than that. Alchemists were interested in a range of chemical technologies. Their work, successes and failures both, contributed to metallurgy, mining, pharmaceuticals, and medicine. The study of historical alchemists and their work continues to reveal the enormous complexity and diversity of its practice, and why it was and is important to human history. And it laid the foundation for what we now call chemistry.
Heinrich believed that the way to truth didn't lay between different schools of thought or among philosophical distinctions, but rather in self-knowledge and self-awareness. His work focused on the study of occult sciences and teasing out solutions or possible solutions to problematic theological questions. He was esteemed among his peers and scholars.
But the attention he attracted from religious authorities was detrimental to his studies and to his writing. During his lifetime, Heinrich outraged the church and was arrested, jailed, and denounced as a heretic. He also may have been arrested by order of Francis I for using some disparaging words about the Queen Mother. That's really neither here nor there. There's not much evidence that Heinrich was seriously accused of practicing magical or occult arts. And we know for sure that he was not executed for heresy or any other crime. His life was riddled with financial hardship, and those monetary difficulties led to harassment from creditors. And he died in poverty at age 48, but left us with this wisdom that has lasted through the years. I confess that magic teacheth many superfluous things, and curious prodigies for ostentation. Leave them as empty things, yet be not ignorant of their causes. But those things which are for the profit of men, for the turning away of evil events, for the destroying of sorceries, for the curing of diseases, for the exterminating of phantasms, for the preserving of life, honor, or fortune, may be done without offense to God or injury to religion, because they are, as profitable, so necessary.
Heinrich has been memorialized in Christopher Marlowe's 16th century play, The Tragical History of Dr. Faustus, where Faustus proclaims he will become, quote, as cunning as Agrippa was. He also appears as a character in Mary Shelley's novel Frankenstein and in her short story The Mortal Immortal. He continues to appear in novels today and even appears in the video games Temple of Agrippa and Amnesia: The Dark Descent.
And for all you Harry Potter fans, Heinrich lives on not just in science or with Frankenstein, but in Hollywood too. In the novel, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, Ron Weasley says to Harry Potter, quote, chocolate frogs have cards inside them, you know, to collect famous witches and wizards. I've got about 500, but I haven't got Agrippa or Ptolemy. Heinrich's trading card reads, celebrated wizard imprisoned by muggles for his writing because they thought his books were evil. That's kind of a perfect quote about him.
For more perfect, hopefully, things, would you like to join me in the cauldron?
I would love to. I hope there's something bubbly and tasty.
There is something bubbly. It's like you're psychic.
I might be.
Okay, this also includes an ingredient we have not featured on the show before, and I've been wanting to kind of mess about with it. And then I happened to grab some recently on a trip to the liquor store. So, the Restless Heretic. This first ingredient is not the thing I got from the liquor store, but it begins with a teaspoon of blueberry jam. If you are lucky like me, you have an amazing friend that makes jam every year and sends it as holiday gifts, and you have beautiful homemade blueberry jam. But if you don't, you can purchase it. Also, I should note, if there's anybody out there of questionable taste who doesn't enjoy blueberries, you could sub it out, but why would you? The blueberries also give this drink an absolutely beautiful color. So to that 1 teaspoon of blueberry jam, you are going to add, and I would put this in a shaker, 2 ounces of honey mead.
Oh.
And I would muddle it together, just stir it together with a spoon for a little while, and then I would give it a little bit of a shake because you want to really like dissolve the sugars of that jam. Now, at this point, whether or not you strain it or not is up to you. I like leaving the little fruit bits in it because then when you get to the bottom of your glass, they've absorbed a lot of beautiful things because we're not done here and they have this beautiful flavor. So you're going to pour that into your glass. I would use my favorite, the chilled coupe.
I knew it.
Because you're going to add 4 ounces of champagne to the situation.
Oh, bubbly.
Yeah, and I would use something with a little bit of sweetness to it if you can, whatever champagne has a night or sparkling wine you have that's a little bit sweeter and not quite as dry. One, it's beautiful because it's got that like, you know, purpley bluey tone to it. 2, it's got bubbles. And I don't know why, but when I think of alchemy, and particularly, of course, when I think of alchemy in France, I think of champagne and like this sense of like discovery and things happening. Because as you said, alchemy is the basis of a lot of actual science that we use and need today.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny, one of the first things that came to mind, and this may age me, but I remember as a child watching the Smurfs, and there was Gargamel, and he had his cat, and he had his cauldron, and he, to me, was an alchemist.
Girl, don't open the Pandora's box of my love of Smurfs, okay? Just don't.
I didn't know that.
Don't. I will talk about Jokey for 100 years. You know, Smurfette became a blonde through alchemy. But the
I believe she just became through alchemy.
Right. Yeah, she was originally a brunette and then became a blonde. I liked her brunette, kind of punky Vivian Westwood look, personally.
Right, but you know.
That is neither here nor there, because we're still talking about this. But I do want to note, as you said, alchemy is this kind of like mess of crack pottery. And in fact, there were a lot of scientific concepts being seeded there. They just kind of went down some paths that weren't necessarily always based in scientific truth.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how we figure stuff out.
Exactly.
You try stuff and go, oh no, that didn't work. That wasn't quite right.
But this part of it was right.
Right. So yeah. So that's why I wanted to include bubbles here. I've been wanting to include mead for a while, and mead is like an ancient drink. There are instances of references of it thousands of years back. So it also seemed like a good one to bring up here. We're talking about two alcohols that are low ABV. So it's not like a drink that is a mess. You could maybe have two of these if you were celebrating and not worry about getting completely inebriated. The mocktail for it is also amazing. It is 5 ounces of ginger ale, 1 ounce of honey syrup. Again, I will say not straight honey. You want to do half honey, half water, and heat them up together so they blend. And then let it cool off, and that's your honey syrup. So it's thinner and will combine with other things more easily. And then your teaspoon of blueberry jam, and you can stir that all up however you want.
That sounds delicious.
It is so delicious and so yummy. That's like a thing I'm going to make like as a breakfast drink. It's so yummy. As I always say, I like to use a sugar-free ginger ale because it makes it not as heavy and cloying. And then it's like a really bright, beautiful, slight fruity, but that honey gives it this nice earthy grounding roundness to it. Yum. And that is called the Restless Heretic.
his intellectual journey includes blueberry jam.
It does today.
What he ate for breakfast while he was wandering around Europe.
Blueberries grow in Europe.
Exactly.
Odds are good. And he was certainly in Champagne Country at the time. And mead was probably around wherever he went.
Of course. And I believe he was locked in France for a good 4 years. So I'm sure he would have appreciated this drink.
Listen, worse places to be locked. That's
exactly
for sure. So yeah, I am quite delighted with how this one turned out. Because I have not played with mead a whole lot in my life. I really want to do something with mead and culinary rosebuds soon, but we'll see what happens.
I vote for that. Please do.
Right. I still have plenty of that mead left. So stay tuned. One never knows where that might pop up or if it will even be in seasons to come. We will be right back here next week with another alchemy or witchcraft story and another cocktail and mocktail. And we hope you join us here on Criminalia. Criminalia is a production of Shondaland Audio in partnership with iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from Shondaland Audio, please visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.